Ed might have outdone you.
He canceled something?
He canceled something even before... He committed to something, but he canceled even before he booked it.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 575 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Foz Mamoon and Seth Miller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Howdy.
How are you? The snow hasn't started yet. Seth,
not for another 8 hours.
Foz is a few hours ahead of us on that, so we don't actually expect snow till like 1 a.m.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But a lot of snow.
Yeah. Depends on which forecast comes true.
It's a million-dollar question right there.
It's either 2 feet or 2 inches, right?
Well, for me, 2 days ago it was 6 inches. As of this morning, it's up to 22 inches.
Wow.
Yeah, we were in the 4 to 6, then we became part of the 8, 6 to 12, and now I don't know. So,
wow. Well, good luck.
Yeah.
Who's shoveling tomorrow?
I mean, sure, but
if it's that much snow, there will probably be a few rounds of shoveling. So I suspect I will shovel tonight, then in the morning, and then tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, that's a good workout. It's good for you.
Yeah. Trying to make this aviation related. There've been a whole bunch of cancellations already.
From Boston down to D.C., basically, there's been a lot. Do you have the total numbers?
I haven't seen total numbers yet, but last night, I want to say, like, the first 1,000 came in pretty easy. And so one airline executive was predicting 5 figures.
Wow.
I'm committed. AA is suspending operations at Philly, Newark, JFK, LaGuardia, and Boston this afternoon, and not resuming until tomorrow afternoon.
Do I think they'll even be able to get started by tomorrow afternoon? That Monday afternoon?
If they run one flight, they have started.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's going to depend on conditions on the ground and people getting there. Like, people getting to the airport to be able to work more than the planes, right? Like, the airports, I think the last storm was somewhat telling, right? Even Boston, like, the airport managed to get a runway open and had some people working, but it took a long time until, like, full complement or like sufficient complement of staff from Delta ground handling could get there to actually like manage a plane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think about all the logistics that go into it, right? You need the ground staff. You need people behind the scenes that are working baggage.
Right.
You need all the front counter staff. If you only have one of those people, that's not effective. So,
yeah.
Well, good luck. In other news around airports, the federal government had said yesterday, Saturday, that TSA checkpoints, TSA PreCheck, and Global Entry were going to shut down as part of the government shutdown that's happening right now. As of this morning, Sunday morning, that hasn't happened yet.
And a new statement was issued saying PreCheck is going to stay open.
Do we know anything about Global Entry?
I have not seen anything about Global Entry yet.
I mean, in the world of like things that don't take a lot of people, like PreCheck takes the same amount of security people, but you can pass more people through it quicker.
Correct.
Global Entry requires one guy to check your passport.
Well, listen, if you can't pay for the computer, Stephen.
It costs a lot.
I suspect it's more a political move.
Oh yeah, absolutely, totally. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. I will say, yes, you can put more people through a PreCheck line much more efficiently. That only works if you have enough people who have PreCheck.
PreCheck, yeah.
You know, if you have enough PreCheck users passing through the airport. But at this point, the number of and type of passenger does not seem to be changing. So, that's still going to be there because there's always been that.
And I think the opposite is also true. Like, if you have PreCheck people that can't use it anymore, now you're just adding people to a queue that takes longer. And
correct.
So, you know.
And they may have done, like, the PreCheck light thing. We don't know. But,
yeah.
And hopefully we never find out. But I'm flying on Friday and looking forward to it.
I'm flying next Tuesday. I hope there's no issues. Otherwise, a very long trip comes to a very quick end. Anything goes wrong in that trip, it comes to a very quick end.
You know? Well, I guess it depends on where it goes wrong.
Yeah, that's a better point.
If it goes wrong in Southeast Asia, it could be a very long end or slow end.
A very slow burn, yeah. Yeah, good point. In news that'll piss Ed Pizzarella off, United Credit Cards and United itself has made some changes to credit cards. I don't think any of this is good. So the basic gist, real quick, and then I'll let you guys talk about it. If coming April 2nd, if you do not have a United card that has a yearly fee, so I think it's Explorer and above, if you don't have one of those cards, your earnings per dollar for redeemable miles goes down by down by two. If you have a card, your redeemable miles goes up by one. So there's that. On top of that, they're changing the reward availability slightly to where you get a discount for holding one of the cards. And if you have an elite status and holding one of the cards, you get a slightly larger discount on those rewards. Thoughts?
The free cards, you do qualify for those things, but you have to spend $10,000 a year.
Thank you, Foss. That's correct.
Thoughts?
It is putting a Band-Aid on a bigger problem.
I don't even know that this is a Band-Aid. Like, it drives, arguably drives more people to carry a co-brand card, which is good for business because, you know, they make, United, the airlines make money off the co-brand cards. But, like, it's this, I feel like the carrot stick balance has just gotten way out of whack.
So, I don't think it actually convinces anyone to carry the card. It convinces people to have the card. And there's a big difference.
I didn't say use. I said carry, is what I meant.
Well, yeah. I don't carry my card. It sits in my desk.
Sure.
Right?
You're not even empty.
No, my United card has sat in my desk for the last 5 years because there's no benefit of using it. They continue to devalue the miles. They continue to increase award prices, make it harder. And revenue management is just asleep at this point. They don't even open awards for a lot of these things. And so what's the drive, right? They've put themselves in a pickle where they've devalued these things so badly, but they need to issue more points because that's the only way they're getting paid.
They need to issue more points through partners.
Correct.
Yeah. No, I get pushing the credit card. You know, we've talked about airlines being banks that happen to fly airplanes and whatnot for far too long now. But I do wonder if this is not a step too far. And truth be told, the vast majority of, I shouldn't say the vast majority, I wonder how many miles are earned through flying versus other things. I actually would expect, just based on total revenue for an airline, more miles are issued from flying than other stuff still. But I feel like for people who are actively, let's say, you know, quote unquote, playing the game or whatever, using frequent flyer points and redeeming awards, that number maybe has shifted or isn't quite the same, right? Like, how many people redeeming for a flight travel reward, what percentage of those points are earned through third party versus through airline spend? And I have to think it's skewed towards third party at this point.
Oh yeah.
And I think the miscalculation by United here is like it's a pullback in the beginning. Like the weird thing about this is it's happening at the beginning of the year, like post, you know, January 1st or post even January 30th when your status changes, and not in the middle of the year, not very far out. They're just kind of making this announcement and making it happen. Maybe there's something going on. I don't know. I feel like it's just kind of a money grab that, you know, everyone forgets that they hold miles on the books as liabilities. So there's got to be something at play there.
They do, but I don't feel like it's a real liability.
Fair.
If the airlines want to act like banks, they should be regulated like banks.
And how would you do that, though? Put cap rates?
Cap rates. Put controls around how quickly they can devalue the things.
I mean, it's right? A currency, right? So
yeah, they're treating it like a currency. They're issuing it like a bank. That's what they want to do. But the reality is they should really just focus on flying.
Do you think, so this is Chase's United's credit card partner, do you think they've seen like a bit of fall off on the cards, not just holding, but even people having the card, like at all. Since some of these other cards, the premium cards, have come into play, do you think that's skewed people that way? And they're trying to take back some of that?
Well, I think there's too many premium cards, but that's the fundamental problem, right? The challenge is, what is the value of the thing you're earning? Right. If United continues to devalue the miles, and I can instead earn Ultimate Rewards points, which I can put into any number of carriers, including United,
yep,
that difference between 4% versus 3%, I'd rather take the 3% to have more options.
And, oh, go ahead. Sorry, Seth.
I say, yeah, to Fod's point there, right? A more fungible, a point that has more options for usage is worth more, even if it's, you know, you earn fewer of them. And that's, a lot of people focus on earning and not on the burning when talking about points and all of these things. The other thing I was going to say is sort of to Faz's point about devaluation. One of the interesting lines in the press release in sort of describing the 10% discount that you get for having a card, a GoBrand card, was I guess some of the premium inventory is going to be available. I don't know if it's XN or not, like not X because it's premium, but like if it's the IN bucket or something else, and if they've switched sort of how all those buckets are defined. But the press release makes a note about something. And so with Polaris awards available from 80,000 points. And just the fact that that's the base price now for a long haul business class award is kind of crazy to me. One way.
Yeah, it's a 60% increase in less than 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the actual story, right? Like, I feel like the rewards have become so much more expensive and harder to find that even if you had the card and you had access to the space, the odds of actually finding the space are very low. Like, I haven't seen anything to really Asia that's usable in months.
Ed and I have been waitlisted for Adelaide, San Francisco next Saturday for 60 days as Global Services for a flight that continues to run empty. They haven't cleared those upgrades.
Yep.
Yeah, Stephen, to your point about Asia, I would say the two trips in a row now, I've at least been able to get ANA business class seats last minute.
Yep.
On their lesser product, but like a bed is a bed at some point. And beats the hell out of economy class. So, but yeah, and the partner awards are actually reasonably priced.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Like, oh, you need something on United that United only flies out of your airport? Good luck.
Yeah.
Connect twice to get a partner? You might actually find something.
But, you know, United is also restricting partner availability to U.S.-based connections.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you mean like not making nonstops available?
If you were to VPN to Canada, you would see different results than you would out of the U.S.
Wow. Yeah, I just don't think this is good.
How do you feel about being Global Services for Life, Foz?
Yeah. honestly, the only difference from 1K is the ability to use the earlier boarding and global lobby.
And yeah. That's the biggest help, I guess.
I would say from a customer service standpoint, I probably got better as a help as a 1K than I have as a GS thus far.
Really?
Yes.
That's kind of depressing. Let's talk about the other credit card story that wasn't actually a story. Hyatt, there was a post about Hyatt and it spread like wildfire. About Hyatt coming out with a new card, new premium card. Bunch of details, or I shouldn't even say details. They were thought details. They were imagined details. Turns out, not true at all. It was a social experiment to see how fast misinformation spreads on the internet. And it worked.
Yeah.
I am not convinced it was 100% fabricated.
You think there's like some truth to it?
I think it's just too detailed. The details are just too perfect for it to be all fiction.
But what do you think? Like, Chase is going to come out in 3 weeks and go, oh, yeah, that wasn't actually the card. We're thinking of another premium card.
No, I mean, I could see them doing a premium card, right? The Hyatt card's been successful. but you know, everyone's jumping on the premium bandwagon. I could see them introducing another category because particularly with Built, right? The number of people who are running to Hyatt to do redemptions is crazy. It's created a whole new category of people doing higher redemption. So they're seeing a high demand for redemption, especially at the higher end properties. I totally see them launching a category 9, if not a category 10 at some point. It might not be this year.
So you, I mean, so this person, that's, I mean, I think that's the key with the social experiment is they put in enough stuff that's actually plausible to make it believable to get people to pick it up.
Yeah. And I will say, and having been on both sides of this at various points in my writing and reporting over the years, like there certainly is a rush to report on things like this because it makes for great traffic. And it's easy to say it's plausible enough, may as well go with it. But when it turns out to not be true, that's also a little awkward. And there's a challenge with trying to confirm things with the company, right? You could easily say, why would anyone report this as a, you know, writer without checking with the company first? And it's, there are times, and it depends on who you are and what your relationship is with a company, but there are companies that I continuously ask for answers about things who don't talk to me. Some of them are very big, some of them are very small. But like, hi, I'm writing a story about you. I think this is important. Could you get me an answer to question X? And no, these are, and some of, and sometimes it's people I know and do work with and they don't respond. And, but, you know, Boeing, for whatever reason, decided I am not worthy of being on their media list. They won't send me press releases. They won't answer my questions. I haven't figured that out. It is what it is. There are other like in-flight connectivity companies who subscribe to my premium website who don't always answer my questions. So different layers of relationships there. But in the meantime, oh my God, this is huge news. I've got to produce it. Like,
You get it out there.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss the story.
And some people are better than others about noting that it's rumor versus real.
Yeah. I think it was for a college student, right?
Allegedly.
Yeah. I mean, that's it makes it even better. So Mac 7, what's happening, Seth, with the Mac 7?
Southwest Airlines now thinks they might actually have a flyable aircraft with passengers delivered at the end of this year and in service early 2027.
Southwest should just keep their mouths shut until it actually happens. Do you think this is true? I mean, I guess the MAX 7 is more likely than the MAX 10.
The 7 was always a little further along in the process than the 10. So it theoretically was going to come first. There was the like de-icing thing on the engine cowling, right? That was the pending thing that both of them needed. And I think this timing aligns with, we have to go back however long ago when Boeing was like, oh, we're going to slip it in there. It'll be fine. We'll just get another exemption. And the FAA was like, the hell you will. It finally got to, this would be the timing where it would work. So this is assuming that there wasn't, you know, slippage and that certification process happens on time. That is hard given government shutdowns in between and other things, but it seems like maybe this one could be real.
Yeah. I mean, if they could actually get the issue solved, that's the real question to me. Like, have they solved the root problem with the icing stuff? I think that's
My understanding was that the technical solution they had really did solve it.
Yeah.
They had to engineer it and build it and get it into the assembly flow and whatever.
So maybe that took 2 years. I mean,
that seems realistic. 2 years.
Yeah. Well, it's good news if it actually happens. It's a plane that I think Southwest is desperate for. So it's.
Has anyone other than Southwest bought it?
I'm surprised United hasn't.
Why?
Because they rely on the 700s quite a bit still.
Well, but they could fix that with the SFP 800s anywhere they rely on the 700s.
But do they have an SFP Max?
I don't think they need an SFP Max. I think the Max engines are powerful enough
to get it off for, you know, SNA and things with it. Okay.
I think there might be, you might have some weight restrictions or limits in some cases, but generally, yeah, I think it works.
Okay. I haven't seen any other orders, though.
Yeah, and I thought there was at one point, but I'm actually a little surprised the Wikipedia for Max 7 for Max deliveries doesn't break it down by type. Whereas the other type, where like the NG one does.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, do it.
United Airlines, it just says 510 orders. It doesn't break it down at all.
Yep. Let's see.
That might partially be driven by the fact that people keep moving orders around.
Sure.
Okay. San Diego, a listener wrote in and they stated, we were talking about San Diego with Ed, and they were talking about how once Delta moves to T1, they think Alaska's going to really push hard at San Diego and open a lounge and do some other things.
Well, they already announced they're opening a lounge.
Yeah. I think the listener's point is Alaska is going to grow San Diego. And I wouldn't disagree with that. I didn't realize how many flights Alaska actually had out of there. I mean, they do a bunch of transcons out of San Diego. They're starting to send out some of the one-off stuff that they were doing out of Seattle. It wouldn't surprise me. And then they say, look at Carlsbad, and Carlsbad's growing. I think I mentioned to you guys, I rode with a guy. He was like my Lyft driver and he was headed home from Carlsbad. And he happened to just like pick up a ride on his way home. He was a gate agent for AAA at Carlsbad. That's his job. So we had like a long discussion. He's like, oh yeah, it's always busy whenever. He's like, you know, we only have so many flights a day, but he's like, they're all full. So
yeah, the Carlsbad one is interesting. I'm not sure. I thought there were some limits at Carlsbad about what they were willing to take for commercial operations.
Well, the locals are fighting it for the jets because it used to be, right? So previous Carlsbad operations used to be all props.
Right.
So it was USA or America West to Phoenix and United to LA. So they've been fighting it, but last I heard, the people fighting it have been losing.
Interesting. I mean, not too surprising, but yeah, I know there was some pressure there.
It's all E-175s right now.
Yep.
So, yeah. But I think the point is like there is a huge customer base in that area, and Alaska could capture a lot of it. Well, if they grow.
Part of the problem with San Diego is what they've done to that airport, right? The allure of San Diego was it was an easy airport to get in and out of. It is no longer an easy airport to get in and out of, right? If you're renting a car, you've added 40 minutes to your journey.
And not just that, just like the whole experience is kind of like it takes, if you need a car, like if you're getting picked up by somebody, everything takes longer because it used to be it was super quick to get out of San Diego.
Like part of that though is that there's just a lot more people. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think that's the issue, right?
But that's because they've let so many flights come into it, right? The airport's been too busy trying to get more and more lift in and out of there. The allure of San Diego was it was a hidden gem because it was hard to get to. Now that they've made it so accessible, like I used to be able to, like every week I'd fly, I would leave my house when I saw the plane go over the inbound, go over my house. And that's when I would leave the airport for the airport. I'd get there, I'd park, I would still have 15 minutes before boarding.
Foz sounds like me with PDX.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn, damn it.
It's the place is so popular, no one goes there anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just looking. San Diego's up to 3,300 departures in December of this year on Alaska, and Portland's only at 4,500.
Yeah.
It's getting there.
Well, because Alaska moved a lot of the San Francisco and LA operations to San Diego.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. San Francisco's down to just 1,800. I'm looking at August now. 4,500 at Portland, 3,300 at San Diego, 1,800 at San Francisco.
I mean, there's a lot of complaints, like people in San Francisco that are saying, hey, look, they've basically killed my airport. Like, they're just not flying anywhere. Yeah. And it's true. Like, they used to have Red Eyes, the East Coast. They used to have a bunch of stuff out of both LAX and San Francisco, and now that doesn't really exist.
LA is only 1,800 also, and then Seattle's just over 11,000. But that is, the other four combined are roughly the same as Seattle this summer. That's crazy.
I mean, I honestly think of the moves, I actually think the San Diego move makes more sense than Portland. Like, it would be... I think it would behoove Alaska to do more intra-California connections, West Coast connections at San Diego. I don't think the airport can actually handle it. Like, I think those gates that they use I mean, they're spread so far across. Like, what is it? What's the terminals plaza? I was telling you this. Like, they have
Terminal 2.
But it's like two wings of Terminal
2. Yeah, it's the old wing and then the new wing, right? The old wing is just, like, it can't handle the passenger count that it's seeing. Because the gates are literally for 40 people.
And it reminds me of the old LaGuardia. Like, it reminds me of, like, it's a long hallway that's really skinny with some restaurants on one side. And then
low ceilings.
With low ceilings, with gates that can't actually handle the number of people that are sitting there.
But to their credit, they don't have the leaky ceiling.
That's true. Well, there's no rain.
Do they not have leaky ceilings, or do they just not have that much rain? He never noticed.
They don't. Even when it rains, the ceilings don't leak. You don't have the garbage bags hanging from the tiles, you know, funneling water into the bucket.
I feel like their challenge there, though, is like to get to the other side, to the new pier, is that's a heck of a walk. And so facilitating connections is hard.
It's not that bad of a walk when you compare it to a lot of bigger airports.
No, it's just there's no people mover. There's nothing like that makes it that speeds it up. So it's, you know, it's a 10-15 minute walk if you're a fast walker.
Yeah, but what airport has people movers left at this point?
That's true. Fair enough. So maybe it's a good move. I don't know.
I mean, look, they're becoming the dominant carrier, right? Them and Southwest are duking it out. All the majors have kind of retracted, justifying to hubs.
Yeah.
At this point, it's an opportunity, and they seem to be doing reasonably well.
Yeah. I like the idea. Porter. What is going on with Porter, Seth?
You know, a little bit more of the same, but new routes, interesting stuff. They're banking on preclearance being available at Billy Bishop, downtown Toronto, starting really soon, like in the next month or two.
Wow.
Is what I think. So definitely by the summer, and which such a weird one. Like I know it was announced. I know we talked about it, but like the fact that it's actually happened, it feels like it's just been pretty quiet as it's come along.
I mean, Air Canada's been saying the same thing.
Yeah. It's true. And I know like Air Canada was going to add some more routes, I think transborder stuff there to take advantage of it as well. But, triple daily from, Billy Bishop to O'Hare starting in September. And, best guess is A, taking advantage of preclearance, and they've said that that's part of it, that it will be preclearance flights, so they don't have to go over to the Terminal M, the M gates, whatever, in Terminal 5, and also the American Airlines partnership.
So do you think they'll use, not great for American, because you're going to use a gate.
Maybe they'll use the shared gates, but just close to American.
Yeah. I think this is good. I think Chicago is one of those places where it would be nice. This gets rid of Midway though, right?
This moves them out of Midway. Yeah. So win some, lose some. I will also say there was an interesting I saw the other day, sort of scrolling by the ramp up at O'Hare for this coming summer as United and American fight for basically running enough flights so they can grab more gates from each other. Is a problem in many ways, but it's like the number of flights that they're operating is significantly higher than last year. And it's the thing I saw was from ATC basically saying, yeah, you're expecting us to do 24% more flights. So this coming August, they're scheduled for 39,000. They were at 31,400 last August. Almost 25% more flights with the same number of controllers and all the same staffing restrictions and limitations. Oopsie.
What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be ugly.
Plus, they have three daily from Midway, or from Porter, from YTZ. The drop off.
Do you think going to O'Hare for them is really about connections? Because it used to be like I saw Porter, especially the Q4s, as... And especially from Billy Bishop, as like the business routes, like people going to offices in each city.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
I think part of the problem is if they only fly to Midway, you can get to the city from either Midway or O'Hare, but if you're going to the Western Burbs, Midway is not an option.
Yeah, if you're going to anything along whatever highway that is.
90. Right. Yeah. So, and there's a lot of headquarters and businesses out in Schaumburg and stuff. So, it opens up some more opportunities for them from a business clientele perspective.
Yeah. I was just thinking from the perspective of like Midway, it's a quicker trip into downtown, but yeah, that makes sense. Schaumburg. Yeah, I forget about all that stuff that's out to the west.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Dulles effect in D.C.
Yeah. Even the stuff north, like towards Milwaukee. Like, there's a lot up there that way.
And just because you land on a north runway doesn't mean you can go to Milwaukee, Steve.
I mean, can you just let me off here? My office is right that way. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to chat about?
No.
We're going to talk about Frontier at JFK, Qantas Kangaroo Route Party, Beyond, and privacy doors coming to economy class, maybe, sort of, in the bonus topics. So if you're Patreon subscribers, stick around for that. If not, we will talk to you next time. We appreciate you listening. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.